Well, now, I need some complete honesty, please. Complete honesty. Who read the entire book of Ecclesiastes between 1, 2, 3? Yeah, well, there you go. I spoke this morning about the entire book of Ecclesiastes, and somebody said, I won't name them, that was really depressing. Really depressing. Not wrong, really. It's a difficult book to read. And we'll try and make it a little bit more comprehensible. And I hope uplifting in a curious way. Good. Normally when I speak, not here but elsewhere, I start with what I call a thumbnail sketch. So if you don't remember anything else, you remember this. And that's what most people do. Don't look down, number one. Look up, look around. Don't look down, look up, look around. Well, we haven't got a thing here. We're going to start Stories of Life today. And Stories of Life is going to be a series, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. For reasons that have nothing to do with anything in the Bible, we're starting with Ecclesiastes, and that's me. So, Ecclesiastes, Stories of Life. And I haven't got that thing there, so I'm going to peer around like this. No, it doesn't work, don't worry. We'll sort it. Ecclesiastes. So, a little bit of history first. For those of you that haven't read it, and that's 99.9% of you, the author, Solomon, you can get that from Ecclesiastes' first chapter. You can work out who it is. And for those of you who haven't got quite that far, Solomon, son of David, the man who said to God, or God said to him, you can ask me anything. You can ask me anything. Now there's a thing. Imagine yourself as a little child. Dad says, you can ask for anything, and I'll give it to you. Anything. Ever happened to any of you? I don't see any hands going up there. Solomon says, actually, I'd like wisdom. Actually, I'm going to look after this nation of Israel now, and I need to know how to do it. I need to know the best way. I need to have wisdom. And for that, God said, well, you've asked for wisdom, and that pleased me. That's really good. You've been really sensible. You've asked for wisdom, and all the rest will follow. Actually, if you'd thought about it, that was probably true anyway. If you ask for wisdom, you're going to get wealth, you're going to get health, you're going to get all the rest of it. But that's not the thought process. He asked for wisdom. And as a result, amongst other things, we get this particular book, which is full of little snippets of wisdom. We'll come to it in a minute. But those little snippets of wisdom have found their way into the English language. And we quote them sometimes without even knowing where they come from. But Solomon, for all his wisdom, and we remember some of it. You remember the two ladies who had two babies. One died, one didn't. He said, bring them here. I'll work out whose baby it is. And said, I'll chop it in half. And the one whose baby it really was said, no, 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 don't do that. Give it to her. And he worked out, of course, that was the real mother. So his wisdom is legendary. Throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, his wisdom is spoken of. But he's like you and me. He's a failing human being. And towards the end of his life, I mean nothing by this, but the way the scripture reads it, his wives led him astray. And he followed the ways of their gods. And he fell like all the other kings of Israel. So like all the rest, although a wise man, although a clever man, although capable of doing all sorts of things, he was like us. So, it's going, oh dear, there we go, Solomon, there we go, right, this is a test of those of you who are probably 35 or 40 or more. Anybody stick their hand up who knows what the significance of the number 42 is? Anybody willing to stand up and tell me what the significance? Eric.
Well, being a bit of a sci-fi nerd, it's the ultimate answer.
It is.
The Hitchhiker's Guide. The problem is we don't know what the question is.
It is. So, why? The ultimate question, you might say. Why? And you don't need me to tell you what that chicken is doing. Why did it cross the road? I'm not going to do that. You can give me answers to that question afterwards. There are a million. Why did the chicken cross the road? Well, why is a terrific question. I use it a lot. Why? And when I was a child, I annoyed my parents enormously. I don't know if your children do this or whether you did it. When you're asked to do something, small, great, the answer is, why? And your parent, if they're going to be sucked into it, will say, give you an answer. And when they give you an answer, they say, why? And this goes on for maybe 15 questions until somebody says, because I say so. And then the child maybe shrinks away and says, why? And maybe that's the end of the conversation. When I was about 10, I first realised, I think, that I was an independent human being having my own responsibility. And I couldn't see behind me. And I actually could only see ahead. And things were going on in other places that I knew nothing about and I had nothing to do with. And I was responsible for what I did. And I was a being that had my own existence. And then alone, you start asking the question, why? What am I doing here? What purpose have I got? In all my years, in all the time I'm going to be on this earth, what's my purpose? What am I doing here? Well, now they're enormous questions. And a little bit jokey and a little bit amusing. But The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the idea of the ultimate question is something we all confront. Usually we confront it at a time when something bad has happened. And we cast around and we think, well, why? Why did that happen? Why am I finding myself in this situation? Well, now, Solomon had all these thoughts, and you might say Solomon was the best equipped to actually do a bit of research. Ecclesiastes is in 12 chapters, and 11 of them, give or take a few verses here and there, are his attempts to resolve that question. What's the purpose of it? What can I do to make my life purposeful? Is there anything important that I can do? Is there value in what I do? Can I look back and say, well, that was worthwhile? Will others look back and say that was worthwhile? If I get a little blue plaque on a building somewhere in London that says, you lived here once, is that really worthwhile? I'm just going to read you, and if you want to follow with me on your paper Bible or on your digital Bible, I'm just going to read some part of chapter 1. And you'll see why I think it really is fairly described as moderately depressing. The words of the teacher, son of David in Jerusalem, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain for all their labours which they toil under the sun? Generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun sets, and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south, it turns to the north, goes round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow to the sea, and yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, they return again. All things are wearisome. More than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear full of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was already here long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, even those yet to come will not be remembered by those that follow them. So there's a little description of a meaningless existence. What's the point of it all? The sun goes round, the water does its thing from the sea to the rivers and back again. And what we do now, people have done for thousands of years. What we're going to do tomorrow, people have done for thousands of years. What's the point? Ecclesiastes, and I hope, if you haven't read it by now, read it when you go home, is a brutally honest book. Brutally honest. And it describes this man, Solomon's, research into all sorts of things that he could do and the result of it. Now, you and I can say, well, I would do that if I had the cash. I'd go country hopping. I'd fly. I'd do a Branson. I'd go to the edge of space. And all of those things I'd grip hold of and I'd love them. But I can't because I haven't got the money. And I'm not bright enough to do it. He had no problem there. Absolutely equipped. Clever bloke. No restriction cash-wise. He could do anything he wanted. So, that's what he does, and he tells us the results. He says, I'm going to take on every pleasure. I'm not going to deny myself anything. I'm going to do anything that is likely to be pleasurable. And when he finished all that, the words in the AV are vanity, meaningless, pointless. He looks back on all those pleasures as a waste of time. Then he does projects, and this is something I enjoy. So there's his DIY, in a big way. He makes palaces. He does enormous things. And he looks back on it, and he says, pointless. Vanity. It hasn't improved me. It hasn't done anything. It's pointless. And then he looks at himself, and he considers wisdom, working things through, understanding things, being able to get through to the bottom of all sorts of difficult problems. Meaningless. Waste of time. Work. Now, work he has a little bit of a different take on. Being proud of what you do. Actually looking back on what you've done and saying, well, that was good. I get some satisfaction out of that. And of that, he says, well, yes, that is something that's God-given. To be able to get satisfaction out of what you do is something that's God-given. But ultimately, the work itself, pointless, meaningless. And then he says, well, what's the difference between the wise man, the clever man, the hard-working man, and the lazy fool? What's the difference? The ultimate end is the same. The fool dies, the wise man dies, and they're forgotten. Centuries pass and they're lost, completely forgotten. Maybe by their children, maybe by their grandchildren. Their great-grandchildren have completely lost it, in truth. I remember fondly my father. I remember fondly my grandfather, my great-grandfather. I never knew. And if I go back any further, completely lost. They mean nothing. Beginning to get depressed? A lot of the words of Solomon in this book are well known. Listen to this. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong. Nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favour to the learned. But time and chance happen to all of them. So, a young lady is going by the inside of a large truck in London. She's a very clever woman. She's done all sorts of good things in her life. But the truck still crushes her as it turns left. It doesn't matter whether she's foolish, wise, what she's done in life. Looked at from the outside, time and chance happen to all of us. So it would seem, wouldn't it? It's all hopeless. It's all pointless. It's all without meaning. My time on this earth will pass. 63 now. Eventually it'll come to an end. And what point will it have? Who will notice it? Who will look back and say, well, I remember him. His words, his deeds, whatever. It will just pass. That's what Solomon's saying. Now that's all depressing. Let's just have a little diversion into the wisdom of Solomon, because there was quite a bit of it. And this is some of the things you will remember, you will have heard, and you probably won't have worked out where they came from. This one is almost, I guarantee everybody's heard this. I'll try anyway. You can put your hand out if you don't know what I'm talking about. There's a time for everything. A season for every activity under the heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to heal. Recognize it? Yeah. A time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to search, and so on. A time for love, a time for hate, a time for peace, a time for war. All that stuff has found its way into our understanding, into the English language. How's this one? Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labour. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. This one, we're back to depression again, I'm afraid. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands, and there's truth in that. You can't take it with you. Your smart car, your smartphone, all of the stuff you can amass, you can't take it with you. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of the ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. A terrific amount of wisdom wrapped up in his few words. I like this because I like builders and I build things myself. Through laziness, the rafters sag. Because of idle hands, the house leaks. Anybody recognize that? Always was. Builders in the days of Solomon, builders today. Sorry if you're a builder. I'm sure you're not one of those. So, if you buy a big item, a new telly, a car, anything worthwhile, but it's a bit techish, you'll get a large manual. You'll get a big, thick tome like that, which you're supposed to understand. And if you don't understand it and read it, when you ring up the helpline, they'll say, page 52 is the answer to your question. You'll also normally get a thing called a quick start guide, which is about 3 pages long and contains the information that you really need. Never mind the dirty, great big book. Well, Solomon spent 11 chapters of Ecclesiastes providing the research, the big book, the research into life, and the conclusion that largely it appears meaningless. The quick start guide requires just this for you to understand. As you go through the 11 chapters, you'll see these words again and again and again. He says, these things are done under the sun. These things are done under the sun. This is done under the sun. That is done under the sun. What he's saying is this. If you look down, all you'll see is activity that in reality appears meaningless. If you look down, under the sun you'll see all of this. In other words, if your view is just at the activity, your view is just what's done, you will come to the conclusion that it's all meaningless. I've sort of lost this thing here because I can't see it. Right, the conclusion of the matter. Hmm. Does that say do it now? Good. I need a mirror here, really. You might think this book was aimed at young people. It's not. It's aimed at us all. And we all take this from it. Do it now. So you've spent 11 chapters working out that actually there doesn't appear to be much meaning in what you do. Chapter 12 starts with these words. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. So you've considered all this stuff under the sun. You've considered all that's going on, and you've worked out that actually on its own, it doesn't have much purpose. So what do you do? Don't call for Ghostbusters. What do? You look up. You don't look down. You look up. Remember now your Creator. So I spent all that time thinking, I've suddenly realised I'm just an independent chap. I can't look behind me. I have my own existence, my own life. I'm responsible for it. What do I do now? Remember now your Creator. In the days of your youth, it says. Remember now your Creator. Don't wait. And if we can have a look at it, if you want to, it's probably worthwhile you doing it. Look at chapter 12. And I'm going to try and do it on this. There we go. It's an interesting idea. It describes everything that happens to you as you get older. Before the sun and light and the moon and the stars grow dark. And the keepers of the house tremble. And the strong men stoop. Your legs get a little bit weak. The grinders cease because they're few. The dentist's been at your mouth. As you get older, that sort of thing happens. Your legs are not quite so strong and you haven't got so many of these. The sound of grinding fades. People are afraid of heights, dangers of the streets. Desires no longer stared. Mourners go about. Remember him before the silver cord is severed. In other words, remember God. Remember your Creator while you can. Now. Everything's meaningless. And then the teacher says this is the conclusion of the matter. He says this actually before he goes. And for somebody who has to read a lot of books, I found this rather amusing. He said, be warned, don't add anything to what is written. Don't add anything. And then he says, of making many books, there's no end. Much study wearies the body. Much study wearies the body. So those of you that have got a vast number of books, I'm not looking at anybody in particular, you're probably getting very weary. Now here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. Fear God and keep his commandments. It's the duty of all mankind. Where have we got to? There we go. A pigeon. Why on the earth did he put a pigeon up on the screen? We've got a lovely beech tree in our garden. We did have. We've got 2/3 of a beech tree in our garden now. In the winter, half of it fell down. And it left a sort of shelf. That isn't it. That's a stock picture. I tried to get a picture of the thing, but it was too far away. I didn't want to disturb it. So, a week back, in this shelf, in the tree in our garden, there's a nest. And sat on the nest is a pigeon. Surprising, not really. Anyway, it was there in the morning, it was there in the afternoon, it was there in the evening, it was there next day. It did not move. 4 days. It stayed there. It stayed there. It stayed there. It stayed there and it stayed there. This morning, it was there, but I could see what it was doing. From our bathroom, you could just see out. It got a little chick there, and it was now feeding the little chick. It had been sat on the egg until it hatched, and then it was feeding its young. Now, if that little bird brain, and I don't think pigeons are regarded as massively clever, has that attitude of duty and responsibility, gives you an idea, doesn't it? That bird sat there and sat there and sat there and sat there until the thing was hatched. And then it wandered off and found some food and fed it and fed it. It's its whole duty. The whole duty of that bird was to look after its young, was to ensure that the young hatched and to feed it and look after it. On the whole, humans rebel against the notion of duty. We are, by default, wanting to be individuals and doing our own thing, wanting to have the freedom to choose. Now, Solomon was a clever chap. He worked all this through for all his life. He looked for all of that time to see what it was that was the answer to the ultimate question. The truth of everything. And he comes to these few words. Fear God and keep his commandments. Now that's simplicity itself, isn't it? Fear God and keep his commandments. The rest, bit of fun. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy your work. But the whole duty of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. Whoa, there we go. Solomon was a clever chap, a very clever chap. But the New Testament tells us that a greater than Solomon arrived. Somebody much more capable of giving you the answer to the ultimate question. Much more somebody that you should listen to. Much more somebody who can prove that he ought to be listened to. So there's this verse, and I think it's up there on the screen, although I can't see it. Yep. A greater than Solomon is here. An important queen comes to see Solomon. And all of those in the New Testament knew about it, that he had been visited by this person. But a greater than Solomon is here. And the people that were talking and were with Jesus Christ at the moment were being challenged. A greater than Solomon is here. There was a man who came to Christ and was challenged about what he was and where he would put his trust. And I hope it's coming up there. Yep. He found himself unable to put his trust in God. Now, as a little 10-year-old, I had all sorts of doubts and fears and misunderstandings, especially when I encountered death. Especially as a young child, I became aware of somebody dying. How do you work that? How do you compute that? Well, says the preachers, well, say my parents, you trust in God. You put your whole trust in God and leave it there. This man says, I do believe. Help my unbelief. That's the way we are. I do believe. Help my unbelief. We still have doubts. We still struggle. We still have at the back of our mind things which say to us, well, really, can we do that? proof. You won't get it. You won't get it. There is no ability. I can't prove things to you. What I can do is what I learnt at about 11. Now, my parents took me on holidays to things called Christian guest houses. Does that mean anything to anybody here? Yes? Well, wonderful things, really. Some might think they're very boring, but of an evening, there would be somebody speaking, and they'd do a series. And I'd like you one day to hear a series on Hebrews chapter 11. Because this man, whose name I can't remember, that's terrible, isn't it? I can't remember the man's name. But he inspired an 11-year-old. He went through all of the characters in Hebrews chapter 11, showing how these failing human beings, failed human beings, wrong human beings, had a tiny, tiny little seed of faith. And as a result of that tiny seed of faith, they're in that book, The Heroes of Faith, in Hebrews chapter 11. People who regarded themselves as the smallest of the small, prostitutes, murderers, but they had a tiny little seed of faith. And for that, God rewarded them. From the beginning, from Abraham, the man who God said, right, you go. I'm not going to tell you where you're going, just go. No trains, no cars, just go and I'll show you where you're going. And without more, he said, yeah, all right, I'll do that. To Gideon, the very sad, minor, small, not confident individual who's hiding from the enemies, you'll be a mighty man, you'll destroy the enemies, get away. Have I could spend a lot of time on that. All of these people, for a tiny little faith, they're rewarded by God's power. That faith is not your own. You can't work it out yourself. That's why the man says to Christ, I believe, help my unbelief. Because that's the gift of God. God can give you that faith so you can grip it. You can't work it out yourself. So, don't look down, because if you look down, you'll see that meaningless vista that Solomon describes. All vanity, all meaningless, all chasing after the wind. You can look around, you can do that, but I guarantee you'll be as if somebody said this morning, a little depressed. Look up. Remember your Creator. Never mind days of your youth. Now, whoever you are, however old you are, remember your Creator, because He formed you. Now, just think a little bit about that. Remember your Creator. Why did He create you? What is the purpose? Why did He make your flesh and blood? What did He have in mind? End. Terrible. Purpose is this, and it's my favourite verse. I strive, I press on, to find out, to take hold of that for which Christ took hold of me. Let me say it again, I'll say it two or three times. I press on to take hold of that for which Christ took hold of me. I've got a purpose. I may not quite know what it is. And if you think it through, try not to knock things over. If you think it through, Paul wrote 2/3 of the New Testament. And he is saying, I press on to take hold of that for which Christ took hold of me. What it is? What's my purpose? What's my ultimate reason for being? I'm going to press on to find out. I'm not going to stop now. I'm going to try and find out why it was Christ took hold of me. Why did he put his love on me? Why did he come to the cross of Calvary to die for me as an individual? Because he had a purpose for me. And I'm going to press on to find out what that purpose is. So, let's come back down to a little bit of reality for next week. When you find yourself worrying about things, things have happened to you, and you have a problem which you have to solve. You have things which you don't understand. You won't know the purpose now. You won't see how this will pan out. And when your doubts press in on you, as they all do, every one of us finds that time when we doubt what we're doing and what we think. Remember this. The purpose that God has is still there. It's still there. And what you're enjoined to do, what you're pressed to do, is to look and to press on to find it. The purpose for which God took hold of you. And touch it by faith. Touch it by faith. In other words, that little tiny piece of faith. Grip it. So, don't be depressed. Don't trouble with the first 11 chapters of Ecclesiastes. What a terrible thing to say. Look at the 12th. Remember now your Creator. Look to the one that brought you into being and has a purpose for you. Shall we pray? Father, we thank you for your love for us. Thank you that you sought us out, that you want to put your love into our hearts, that you want to touch us and motivate us. Help us to see that. Help us all to understand that, that you sent your Son to die for us individually, to bring us back to you, to equip us and give us purpose. We simply ask that in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ.